everyone, and welcome to episode 275 of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast, presented by Overdrive. This is Jill. Hello, Adam.
How's it going?
It's okay.
It's okay. It's cold here now.
It is cold.
I'm not complaining, but Cleveland was like, last week it was 90 degrees, and now this morning we had like a freeze.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, so cool, Cleveland. Well, how about just like a lovely fall for a little bit?
Nope, just gotta jump right to it.
That would be nice. Do you want to tell people what we're doing today?
We are offering up some more books for Book Riot's Read Harder Challenge. We've done this 3 times previously this year. So if you're not familiar, Book Riot at the beginning of every year has a book challenge where they challenge you to read books maybe outside of your comfort zone a little bit. And so we put together, we go through the list and offer up some recommendations for the challenges on the list.
I have them pulled up if you want me to go through what we've done.
Sure.
Okay. So we, like Jill said, we've done this 3 times this year so far because we actually said we were going to do this all year, and we have. So you're welcome. Episode 192 was the first one we did for all those who maybe are new listeners and are looking for some read harder stuff. Because we're going to do 4 of these different challenges today. So we've been doing 4 of them every episode that we do. So Read Harder Challenge Part 1 was episode 192. And we did a book published posthumously. Still can't say the word.
Posthumously, I believe.
That is correct. We did a true crime. We did true crime books. We did a book set in or about the BRICS countries, which was Brazil. Oh, boy. I don't remember what the BRICS, ones are. Look it up. You guys can look it up. We did science fiction with a female protagonist written by a female author. So that was episode 192. Episode 217, we did a classic of genre fiction, a book you can read in one sitting, an essay anthology, and an assigned book you hated or didn't finish, which obviously is different for everybody. And then in episode 245, we did books about nature, westerns, celebrity memoirs, and children's classics published before 1980, which I liked a lot. So today we are going to do a comic written or drawn by a person of color, the first book in a new to you YA or middle grade series, a mystery by a person of color or LGBTQ plus author, and then a book with a female protagonist over the age of 60, which is harder to find than it should be.
Right.
Okay, so for these ones on our monthly episodes, we tell each other what we don't tell each other what we're going to do. But these ones, I sent you mine just so that we don't have any
correct
matches. Because if people are looking for Read Harder Challenge recommendations, it's probably not great if we're both like, here are the same 2 books from both of us.
Correct.
Before we do that, though, if people have feedback or if they're looking for recommendations that we don't mention on any of these episodes, where can they find us and do that?
They can go to our website, professionalbooknerds.com. There we have all of our links for our social, which is Twitter and Instagram, @ProBookNerds. You can email us at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. And our website also has links for our Viber community, where you can come talk books with all sorts of different people, including us.
Yeah, you sure can. Okay. So, the first one we are going to do, as I mentioned, sorry as I'm scrolling through things, is a comic written or drawn by a person of color. So, how many of these did you grab?
I have three for everything.
Okay, all right, do you want to start?
Sure. My first one is Monstrous by Marjorie Liu. This is set in an alternate matriarchal 1900s Asia, and is a richly imagined world of art deco-inflected steampunk.
Mm-hmm.
Monstrous tells the story of a teenage girl who is struggling to survive the trauma of war and who shares a mysterious psychic link with a monster of tremendous power, a connection that will transform them both. The art in this looks incredible.
Yeah, so. I actually have read the first 2, I think, of them, and they are. It's crazy how awesome it is. I also recommend that one. It's really good.
But it was not on your official list.
No, that was not on my official list. I just, when you mentioned it, I was like, oh yeah, I've read that this year. My first one is called Check Please by Ngozi Ukazu, who will be on the podcast actually a little bit later this year. Check Please start. She wrote and did all the art for it. And Check Please started as a digital comic that she put online like every single week, and then started a Kickstarter, and just because people told her that they wanted to purchase copies of it physically. And all three of her Kickstarters like set records for comics and books on Kickstarter. So it's really, really cool. It's very popular. It's all about a queer young boy who is going to a school, an all-male school, to play hockey, and like how he interacts with them. And he loves baking, and he loves vlogging, and he was previously a figure skater, so like he doesn't really fit in the world of hockey, but he's learning, and it's really good. It's really, really wonderful. So highly, highly recommend it.
My next one is Bingo Love by T. Franklin. And then it's illustrated by Jennifer, I think it's St. Ong. I'm actually not sure. I think I've mentioned Bingo Love before, but we did not have it. But Overdrive has it now, so I was very excited when I saw it. Bingo Love is about two young black girls in the 1960s who meet and, as they're growing up, end up falling in love, which does not go over very well with their families. And so they are separated and then end up meeting later in life. And it is an adorable story. It is just, oh my gosh. So that is Bingo Love.
Sounds really good.
It's really cute. I have a copy. I'll let you borrow.
I would love that. My next one is, I actually have three of these. I goofed with my links, just FYI.
What do you mean?
I have three of the comics by.
I do. Oh, no.
Oh, you also do?
I said that. I said I had three for all of them.
You sure did say that. Hey, guys. My next one is called MFK by Nyla Magruder. It's a fantastic adventure following the story of Abby, a deaf girl with a mysterious power who is traveling across a vast desert to scatter her mother's ashes. In a world of sleeping gods, a broken government, and a fragile peace held in the hands of the corrupt, one youth must find the strength to stand up against evil and humanity. Also, the art in this is equally beautiful as all the other things we've talked about so far. So that's MFK by Nyla Magruder. All these are going to be in the show notes, but if you're looking for that one, it's MFK with like periods in between. So just an FYI.
My last one is The Prince and the Dressmaker by Jen Wang.
It's so awesome. I love that book.
So Prince Sebastian is looking for a bride, or rather his parents are looking for one for him. Sebastian himself is too busy hiding his secret life from everyone. At night he puts on daring dresses and takes Paris by storm as the fabulous Lady Crystallia, the hottest fashion icon in the world capital of fashion. And he is best friend of the dressmaker who helps make his dresses for him. I think everything about this is fabulous.
It rules. I love it so much.
So that's The Prince and the Dressmaker.
My last one of these is called Malice in Ovenland. Come on, I can't not do an Alice.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah, I can't not do a Alice in Wonderland adjacent one. So Lily Brown is a bright, curious, energetic young girl from Queens. She lives with her mom and loves reading and writing and spending time with her friends. But she hates cleaning. Me too. Me too, Lily. So when her mom forces her to stay home from the for the summer instead of going off to some fun soccer camp or riding camp, Lily fumes. She wanted excitement and adventure. She didn't want to do chores. Little did she know that the greasy oven in the kitchen was going to give her more excitement and adventure than she could possibly handle. The art on this looks like a cross between like Ren and Stimpy and like Mario. It's really like one of the main bad guys looks like Bowser, and it's very, very fun. So it's Malice in Ovenland by, I think it's Michelin Hess is the name of the author, or Michelin. Either way. Okay, next one. First book in a new-to-you YA or middle grade series.
My first one is The Penderwicks by Jean Birdsall. This summer, the Penderwick sisters have a wonderful surprise, a holiday on the grounds of a beautiful estate called, I think it's Arendelle. Soon they are busy discovering the summertime magic of Arendelle's sprawling gardens, treasure-filled attic, tame rabbits, and the cook who makes the best gingerbread in Massachusetts. But the best discovery of all is Jeffrey Tifton, son of Arendelle's owner, who quickly proves to be the perfect companion for their adventures. The icy-hearted Mrs. Tifton is not as pleased with the Penderwicks as Geoffrey is, though, and warns the new friends to stay out of trouble. Which, of course, they will, won't they? One thing's for sure, it will be a summer the Penderwicks will never forget. Deliciously nostalgic and quaintly witty, this is a story as breezy and carefree as a summer day. It just sounds really cute.
It does sound really cute. Reminds me of, like, the kids from Finding Neverland a little bit.
Peter
Pan with Jamberry.
Yep.
So my first one of these is Beasts Made of Night by Tochi Onyebuchi. So this is a story that takes place in the walled city of Kos. There's a corrupt, these corrupt magis can magically call forth sin from a sinner in the form of sin beasts. These are like lethal creatures that come from their sin and their guilt. And if they aren't eaten up by these young sin eaters, then they basically can just destroy whatever they're going to do. So there's this young sin eater named Taj, and he's indentured to be a sin eater. But basically, the more of these sin beasts that these sin eaters eat, they get these tattoos that are like basically forming that beast on their body. And eventually, your entire skin is covered up with these, and you end up dying, or they're driven mad, one of the two. But Taj has this unique ability to go crazy, and he's just like, he's basically the most talented sin eater out there, and he's also trying to figure out how to stop all of this horrible, corrupt, you know, world from happening. So, cool thing about this is if you read it and you enjoy it, if you read Akata Witch or Children of Blood and Bone this year, you will absolutely love this. Also, if you're a fan of like Black Panther. And the cool thing is, if you like this book, the second book of the duology actually comes out today at time of recording, which is really cool. And there is a podcast called First Draft, which tweets at us a bunch, and they're wonderful. And Toji is on their podcast like this week. So there's a whole bunch of ways you can interact with this book if you want to. So highly recommend it. It's called Beasts Made of Night, and it's wonderful. And the cover is gorgeous.
I have The Bells by Donnell Clayton. So this is a first book in a series about the opulent world of Orleans, where bells are revered for they control beauty, and beauty is a commodity coveted above all else in Orleans. So when the people are born gray, they are born damaged, and only with the help of a bell and her talents can they transform and be made beautiful. But it's not enough for Camilla to be just a bell. She wants to be the favorite one as chosen by the queen to live in the royal palace. But as Camilla finds out more about this world and how it all works, she finds out there's a lot of secrets and a lot of lies happening. And I'm just all about all of this.
Yeah. I feel like I'm friends with Danielle, even though I've never spoke to her, because she's best friends with Zoraida Cordova.
Yeah, she is very instrumental in a lot of the We Need Diverse books. Mm-hmm. She's done a lot of, I know she works as sensitivity reader type thing. Mm-hmm. I know, like, freelance for a lot of stuff. Yeah, she's a big name in the YA world.
Yeah, and just because, again, like, because she's best friends with Zoraida Cordova, who I am not friends with thanks to the podcast, and, like, all of Zoraida's Instagram stories are the two of them traveling places together. So I feel like I know about her and, like, are, like, buddies, even though we've never interacted
or
spoke.
Sure, that's all right.
Not creepy at all. I can't wait till someday she's on the podcast and I have to explain that to her. And she's going to be like, okay, have a good day.
Pretty much.
My next one is called Strange Fire by Tommy Wallach. This is a super unique story that I was not expecting to get as much out of as I did. A really great way to describe it is Oregon Trail meets Westworld. So, Jill.
What?
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. So, it's the first
book. What's it called again?
It's called Strange Fire. So, they said that the first generation of man was brought low by its appetites for knowledge, for power, for wealth. They said mankind's voracity was so great, the Lord sent his own daughter to bring fire and devastation to the world. The survivors were few, but over the course of centuries, they banded together to form a new civilization, the Descendancy, founded on the belief that the mistakes of the past must never be repeated. Brothers Clive and Clover the sons of a well-respected descendant minister have spent their lives spreading the gospel. But when their traveling ministry discovers a community intent on rediscovering the blasphemous technologies of the past, a chain of events will be set in motion that will pit city against city and brother against brother. So it's like, it's hard to understand. This isn't a spoiler because you'll definitely know, you'll think about this throughout the entire book if you're reading it. It's really hard to tell if, like, this is set in the past or if it's set in, like, a long time future from now where they used to know about technology or, like, what. It's really, really interesting and really confusing, but in a good way. I haven't had a chance to dive into the second one yet. I'm actually not even sure if the second one is out. But it is super interesting. It's called Strange Fire.
Okay, so this was the New to Me series. I have not read To All the Boys I've Loved Before in that whole series.
There you go.
So there you go. So for those that don't know, the Netflix series, To All the Boys I Loved Before, is actually based on a book, which is part of a series. So it sounds really cute.
Yeah, it is. My wife, Alex, read them and really, really likes them.
So that's, it's new to me.
Yeah, totally fair.
I'm counting it.
Yeah. The last one of these I have is You Don't Know My Name by Kristen Orlando. I read this because we did interviews with the people from the Fierce Reads tour two years ago or last year at this point. Mm-hmm. She was supposed to be on the tour, but she couldn't be because she got sick, so we never really talked about it. But there is this high school student who is basically like, she's a normal high school student, but she's also like a spy for the CIA, and like, it's, her parents were these spies in this top secret agency called the Black Angels, and then like she's been trained to be very much in the same vein. And like my wife and I have been watching a lot of The Blacklist lately, and so this feels very much on point with that, or like any like shows like NCIS or all those types of things. It's really fun. It's a really quick read. I believe the second one is also out now. But if you are really into like spies or like mystery and like suspense type things, this is really fun. So it's called You Don't Know My Name by Kristen Orlando.
Is that all of yours?
That's all of mine on those, okay. Yeah. So you want to go to the next one?
Sure. So the next one we have is A Mystery by a Person of Color or LGBTQ plus author. So my first one of this is A Study in Scarlet Women by the Chinese-American author Sherry Thomas. This is the Lady Sherlock series about Charlotte Holmes. Charlotte has never felt comfortable with the demureness expected of the fair sex in upper-class society, but even she never thought that she would become a social pariah, an outcast fending for herself on the mean streets of London. When the city is struck by a trio of unexpected deaths and suspicions fall on her sister and her father, Charlotte is desperate to find the true culprits and clear the family name. She'll have help from friends new and old, but in the end, it will be up to Charlotte, under the assumed name Sherlock Holmes, to challenge society's expectations and match wits against an unseen mastermind.
Hmm. That sounds really good.
I know.
That also falls in line with my current reading of all the Hercule Poirot books, which I just finished another one this morning. Plowing through, guys, keeping you updated.
They're so good.
They're so, so good.
I love Hercule.
I'm so bad at, as a quick aside, the only problem I have with them is I'm terrible with large casts of characters in books, and all of them have large casts of characters, and I'm listening to all of them, so if I, like, zone out for 30 seconds, they'll introduce, like, a new doctor or, like, a nephew, and I'll, like, sort of miss what they are, and then in his big reveal at the end, I'm like, of course it was one of those people that I had no idea who you're talking about.
So are you just, like, listening to all of them? Just all the Hercule books?
Yeah, but here's the thing. I'm borrowing them as they become available from our library.
So they're not in order anything?
They're not in order. No, the second one I read was the last one. It doesn't. The only thing that matters is, like, they'll reference, like, Hastings and Poirot will, like, reference, like, I remember that time back in Egypt.
Yeah, but honestly, I think, oh, well, all right.
It's not really that important. Like, it doesn't talk about.
But I feel like they do that even in, I feel like in some of the, you know, the really early ones, he's referencing stuff that never actually were books that she wrote. So I think it's...
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Egypt one's a little on the nose, but...
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, they're all formulaic in the sense that it's, like, they're all, like, 300 pages, and, like, the first, like, 50 pages sets up where you're at and who are the cast of characters, and then the next 100 pages is, like, the what happened, like, what was the murder, And then there's the discovery where Poirot gets really frustrated because he can't find the one thing that he's looking for. And then he finds it, and then he doesn't tell anyone, and then he does the big reveal. And then he does the closing where he explains the big reveal to Hastings. It's like, they're all the same, but I don't care. They're so wonderful. So, anyway, that was an aside. Yes. All to say that I'm bad at large character last sits. My first one of these is Ruby Fruit Jungle by Rita Mae Brown. This was the winner of the Lambda Literary Pioneer Award. It's a landmark coming-of-age novel that launched the career of one of this country's most distinctive voices. Ruby Fruit Jungle remains a transformative work more than 40 years after its original publication. In body-moving prose, Rita Mae Brown tells the story of Molly Bolt, the adoptive daughter of a dirt-poor Southern couple who boldly forges her own path in America. With her startling beauty and crackling wit, Molly finds that women are drawn to her wherever she goes, and she refuses to apologize for loving them back. This literary milestone continues to resonate with this message about being true to yourself and, against the odds, living happily ever after. It's Ruby Fruit Jungle by Rita Mae Brown.
My next one is Long Black Veil by Jennifer Finney Boylan.
Mm-hmm. What a good book.
Actually, you know what? Funny story. I got an arc of this when I first started here that I never got around to reading, but I know, you know, who Jennifer is. But after reading this description again, I was like, how did I not read this?
It's a pretty Jill book.
I know. I'm reading this description, and I'm just like, how did I not read this 2 years ago?
Oh, that's funny.
So we're going to be putting it on hold soon. On a warm August night in 1986, college students sneak into the dilapidated ruins of Philadelphia's Eastern State Penitentiary looking for a thrill. I mean, right there.
I know.
With a pianist, a painter, and a teacher among them, the friends are full of potential, but it's not long before they realize they are locked in and not alone. When the friends get lost and separated, the terrifying night ends in tragedy, and the unexpected, far-reaching consequences reverberate through the survivors' lives. As they go their separate ways, trying to move on, it becomes clear that their dark night in the prison has changed them all. Decades later, new evidence is found, and the dogged detective investigating the cold case charges one of them with murder. Only celebrity chef Casey's old friend Judith can testify to his innocence, but she's protecting long-held secrets of her own, secrets that, if brought to light, could destroy her career as a travel writer and tear her away from her fireman, husband, and teenage son. If she chooses to help Casey, she risks losing the life she's fought to build and the woman she has struggled to become. And any life that contains a before and an after, how is it possible to live one life, not two? Weaving deftly between 1980 and the present day and told in an unforgettable voice, Long Black Veil is an intensely atmospheric thriller that explores the meaning of identity, loyalty, and love. Like how...
I know.
I still don't understand how I have not
read
it.
How you haven't read this.
I know.
Yeah. That's okay. My next one is Speakers of the Dead by J. Aaron Sanders. Speaks of the Dead is a mystery novel centering around the investigative exploits of a young Walt Whitman, in which the reporter come poet navigates the seedy underbelly of New York City's body-snatching industry in an attempt to exonerate his friend of a wrongful murder charge. Also feels pretty Poirot-y. I do like that this has a bunch of, like, I love when people take historical characters, actual historical characters, and then put them into fiction like this. Just historical fiction is so much fun. So, there's Samuel Clemens is in this, and a bunch of other authors and stuff. It seems really interesting, and I'm very much on board. So that is Speakers of the Dead by J. Aaron Sanders.
My third and last one is The Widows of Malabar Hill by Sujata Massey. This is set in 1920s India, and Parveen Mistry, Bombay's first female lawyer, is investigating a suspicious will on behalf of three Muslim widows living in full Purdue when the case takes a turn towards the murderers. So, 1920s, India.
Mm-hmm. There's another one.
I think it's part of a series, too, yeah. I believe.
Yeah. That's why it sounds really familiar.
It probably is.
So my last one of these is The Monkey's Mask by Dorothy Porter. The Monkey's Mask it's really unique. It's a crime thriller, but it's a crime thriller told through poetry. So it's where high art meets low life, passion meets betrayal, and poetry faces profanity on the streets of a harsh modern city. It's actually been adapted to stage and radio, and it's a movie, but it's just really interesting the way that it's told. Again, it's this, like, noir, murdery crime thriller, but it's told all through poetry. So that's The Monkey's Mask by Dorothy Porter. So our last one of the four is a book with a female protagonist over the age of 60. I technically only have two of these, but one note that I put to you in our show note, like our ahead of time notes, speaking of Agatha Christie, any Miss Marple mystery will work if you aren't a Poirot fan, if you're a Marple fan. Any of those will work because she's over 60. So I only have two of these, so I'll let you start.
Okay. I have The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, which is about a legendary film actress who is reflecting on her restless rise to the top and the risks she took, the love she lost, and the long-held secrets the public could never imagine. I'm a fan of old Hollywood. You got, like, an aging, reclusive Hollywood icon. I mean, what's not to like about this?
I've talked about it in the past, but are you listening to the You Must Remember This podcast?
No, I'm very behind on all of my podcasts.
When we're done recording, I'm going to talk to you about the most recent season.
Okay.
It's so up your
alley. I'm very behind on all of them. I'm sure it is, but...
It's so up, especially, like, the new one that just came out this week. It's so up your alley. It's all about the, like, wives of Howard Hughes. Yeah.
Okay, I would be down for that.
I know.
I just... There's, like, a lot of podcasts to listen to out there in the world.
I know. People should only listen to this one. You guys can't see, Jules. I don't have time for your face, but that was the face I just got. Okay, so my first of the two of these is The Night Guest by Fiona.
Did I not see that on your list?
I don't think so. The Night Guest by Fiona McFarlane.
Okay, apparently I did not read Adam's list close enough.
It's okay. So Ruth is widowed, her sons are grown, and she lives in an isolated beach house outside of town. Her teens are few and small. One day a stranger arrives at her door, looking as if she has been blown in from sea. This woman, Frida, claims to be a care worker sent by the government. Ruth lets her in, and now that Frida's in her house, is Ruth right to fear the tiger she hears on the prowl at night, far from its jungle habitat? Why do memories of childhood in Fiji press upon her with increasing urgency? How far can she trust this mysterious woman, Frida, who seems to carry with her her own troubled past? And how far can Ruth trust herself? Sorry. The Night Guest, a hypnotic first novel, is no simple tale of crime committed and mystery solved. This is a tale that soars above its own suspense to tell us, with exceptional grace and beauty, about aging, love, trust, dependence, and fear. That's The Night Guest by Fiona McFarlane, and apparently it's so good that Joe and I both forgot to recommend it.
Fun fact, I apparently only have $2 this time for this one, because I did not...
Well, what's your other one? I'm going to laugh if your other one is the one that
it's not. That one I noticed. Somehow I did not read the... Like, I read the Miss Marple line, and I read your last one, but I somehow missed the line in the middle with that book. My last one is the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, which is a novel by Ernest J. Gaines that came out in the 1970s. It is about a black woman who has lived 110 years, who has been both a slave and a witness to the black militancy of the 1960s. And so this novel is sort of a story. It is a novel, but it's a story of this woman, Miss Jane Pittman. And I think in a book that sort of traverses a very long life of a black woman and everything she would have seen in 110 years it seems very timely and important right now.
Yeah, I would say that would be true. My last one is Lillian Boxfish Takes a Walk. Full disclosure, I haven't read this yet. I just borrowed it this morning, though, because I want to. So this is super interesting. In the 1930s, New York, Jill... This is 1930s New York, just FYI, if you want to read this. Lillian Boxfish took the world by storm. She worked her way up writing copy for R.H. Macy's to become the highest paid advertising woman in the country. It was a job that, she says, in some ways saved her life and in other ways ruined it. So now it's 1984 and she's 85 years old. And she's as sharp, as savvy as ever, and she's on her way to a party. It's chilly enough out for her mink coat, and Manhattan is grittier now. Her sons keep warning her about the subway vigilante on the prowl. But the quick-tongued poetress has never been one to scare easily. So instead what she does is she takes a walk, and it takes her over 10 miles across the city, and she meets bartenders and bodega clerks and security guards and criminals and all sorts of people. And she's basically going back and, like, reviewing her life that she's lived in New York, and all the things that New York has changed her and all the ways that it hasn't changed. So it just seems very interesting to listen to a story about someone who has seen New York change in all these different ways. And yeah, I'm just really, really interested. So that's Lillian Boxfish Takes a Walk. Okay, that's all of them, right?
Yeah.
That's everything we got? Okay, cool. So those are four more Read Harder challenges that we've helped you tackle. Mm-hmm. Again, if you want more recommendations, just shoot us a message. We're happy to help. Anything else you want to chat about?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Okay, cool. All right, well, I hope you guys find these helpful, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can add these titles to their collections and marketplace.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book. And together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our ninth season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.